Thanks, Kim. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. And every Monday, we're fortunate enough to be visited by the feistiest columnist this city's ever seen, Tribune's Eric Zorn. Hi, Eric. How are you?
Two guns blazing.
Yep.
May the 16th be with you.
Oh, my God, you
are so funny. Am I late for that?
No, you're fine.
I'd like to know what artwork you're going to do following the Princess Etch-A-Sketch.
I just saw that. That's really impressive.
I'm blown away.
I was going to do some little circles inside circles. And
that's fine.
Little drawings.
That's fine.
Do you remember Spirograph, how fun that was? They had little plastic circles, and you would just go around and make various geometry figures, basically.
You'd use five different colored pens.
Yeah, but you wouldn't impress anybody the way those Etch-A-Sketch drawings.
But nobody knew, when you looked at it, you didn't realize it was being, you were using some sort of artificial means to create those pictures. But they looked phenomenal.
You know, our standards were kind of low back then, Bill. I think,
sure. Everybody didn't have a lawyer handy at all times.
Home-generated artwork. Man, I tell you what.
Speaking of art, watch this. It's the worst transition in radio history.
This is
How about that Mel Reynolds, huh?
You could draw art on his teeth.
Oh, no.
Life is an Edvard Munch painting.
Yes, it is. For people who are not aware of Mel Reynolds, and he's been in the news for decades at this point.
Oh, my goodness. Let's
give a little background on Mel Reynolds.
Mel Reynolds. Well, for people who don't remember, Mel Reynolds was an up-and-coming politician in Illinois. He was a Rhodes Scholar, which means he studied over in Oxford, England. He was a Harvard Business School grad, and everyone thought that he was... I mean, basically, he was Barack Obama before Barack Obama was Barack Obama.
You're right.
He was this extremely promising young African-American politician, very bright, very well-spoken, and he beat Gus Savage, who was this sort of old-style African-American congressman in the 2nd District. I think I got my numbers right. Anyway, so this was, I think, 92 he won. And then several years later, he got in trouble because he was having sexual relations with a 16-year-old campaign aide.
Yeah.
And was charged with that. And there was a rather spectacular trial in which he had to testify. And it was really something else. He was convicted of that.
And he was married at the time. Did he have a family?
I can't remember. Marisol was his wife.
Yeah, that Marisol Reynolds. I do remember.
Yeah. Anyway, so you flash forward a little bit. Then there was also, while he was in prison, he also got in trouble again for some tax problems that he had with his use of campaign funds. A little bit, somewhat similar to what we're talking about with Jesse Jackson Jr. and Aaron Schock, some of these politicians who get in trouble, not filing the correct documents and misusing their money. Anyway, so he was pardoned ultimately then by Bill Clinton. In one of Bill Clinton's final...
Isn't that ironic? I know. Come on.
The jokes write themselves.
He's the one who pardoned him?
Well, he was actually, I think at that time he was pardoned for just his tax... And his sentence was commuted. He wasn't pardoned. I mean, because the conviction still stands, and that's important to remember because then, as the years went by, one of the things that really stood in the way of Mel Reynolds getting traction again, getting his life back together, was the fact that he's a convicted sex offender. Now he was 40, 41 years old, something like that, having sex with a 16-year-old, which is a terrible thing, and the conviction was obviously solid.
Yeah.
But the fact that he now can't live within 500 feet of a daycare center seemed kind of silly. I mean, it wasn't like he was never going after toddlers and stuff.
Right.
He was going after, teens. It was, and again, very inappropriate, but he wasn't a danger to – it wasn't that kind of a danger. The law prevented him from finding solid places to live.
Can you remind me, because I can't remember what was in it for Bill Clinton to give him a pardon.
Every president has that power.
I know, and they use it like crazy.
Well, right before they're about ready to get out of here. Yeah.
Yep.
And
I think I've talked about this with you. I suggested years ago that power be taken away, that any pardons had to be given with a year or more in office, because you're really escaping any controversy by pardoning everybody at the last minute.
Well, at least before that last election, right? When in November, you really officially become a lame duck. People say that Barack Obama is a lame duck right now. He's not actually literally a lame duck. He's a lame duck after his successor has been elected. At that point, it does seem because there's no way the public can respond at the ballot box to
right.
That action, and it does seem like that part. power ought to be limited at some point, maybe reviewable or something. You don't want to totally get rid of it because it is a nice balance against the power of the state, and it's often used in a wise way.
Yeah.
I know, you know, Governor Quinn and actually Governor Rauner has used the power of the pardon, the executive in Illinois, much better than Blagojevich ever did. Blagojevich was as stingy as possible with these pardons, which is somewhat ironic at this point. Anyway, So as time goes on, and the problem that now Bill Reynolds has gotten into, he failed to file tax returns from 2009 to 2012, and he just didn't file anything. And he was working at the time in Africa, doing a lot of work in Africa as a consultant, consigliere. I don't know what he was doing exactly. It's not clear. You know, he was helping facilitate some business deals over there. His contention to the federal court where he's been charged is that he was only being paid expenses and that so he wasn't actually making any money, wasn't earning enough money to file. But he, after his arraignment last year, one of the conditions of his release was that they, you know, had to know where he was. He got permission to go over to South Africa. Has he followed this part of the story?
His daughter's over there.
I think she's got some sort of spinal issue, and I'm trying to remember exactly what the name of it is. But he's over there caring for her, ostensibly. And then,
why doesn't she come home?
Well, that's a good question. And the other good question is why he didn't come home when he was ordered to come home. The court allowed him to go over for a length of time. He didn't come back when he was supposed to. They ordered him back. He didn't come back. And then finally, when he did come back, he arrived in Atlanta and he was arrested. His computer and phone were seized because they were trying to figure out, you know, what's going on with him. And then it turns out that his daughter, who's allegedly, you know, in such dire straits, is posting pictures of herself on Facebook.
Oh, no.
She was feeling better.
She was feeling better. She was vacationing in Germany.
Yeah, I did
and
see
stuff,
that.
So.
That's right.
So it's just another weird wrinkle in this story. So
this is while he was supposedly visiting her in Africa. She was in Germany at about the same time?
At about the same time, yeah. Or contemporaneously enough to suggest that his presence over there wasn't necessarily needed to. And he, of course, at every stage, he's been crying racism, and this is a terrible thing, because the only reason they're picking on him is because he's black. And so he comes back, he has his computer, his phone seized, and he comes back up to court here, and the judge wants to put him on home confinement with a, you know, monitoring device on his leg, but they can't find a place for him to live. He can't find a friend who doesn't live within 500 feet of a school or a daycare center or a park.
Housing is limited
for, and you know, it's absurd, because now he's 60 some years old. He's not a danger to kids in preschool. I think anyone who contends that is just, I mean, that's kind of part of the hysteria that goes along with sex offenders.
Unable to live near a high school is what he should be.
Well, yeah, I mean, arguably, I suppose you could say that, but He's not a playground pervert. Never was.
Yeah.
But so now he's in Kankakee Jail, Kankakee County Jail, awaiting trial. And last week the news broke that he is unable to prepare for trial, and he'd written to the judge saying, "I got to plead guilty. I got to put this behind me." So I was talking to his legal advisor, not formally his attorney anymore, because he fired the guy as his attorney, but he's still the court appointed legal advisor. And he says, no, he's been talking to Reynolds, and Reynolds now wants to change his plea. He wants to plead not guilty and go to trial, try to make this case. So the story just keeps getting stranger. And
why the change? What happened that made him decide?
This is unclear. I think he probably just realized he had a change of heart. And he's you know, seriously angry about this, and he thinks that he can beat these charges. And the interesting thing is going to be, he's going to have to, you know, call people to the stand who are going to have to explain what they hired him for, what he was doing over there, you know, how much money they were paying him, and so on. I mean, it's just going to be interesting, at the very least, what's going to happen with this guy. But this is a story that there seems to be these cases in Illinois of young, promising politicians who just completely go off the rails.
Right.
And we mentioned Jesse Jackson Jr.,
right.
Aaron Schock, the congressman from Peoria, the guy with the Downton Abbey office.
Yeah.
I mean, these are people, all of whom were talked about as potential, you know, either mayors of Chicago, governors of Illinois, even some of them had presidential ambitions. People were talking about Mel Reynolds as a possible presidential candidate and Jesse Jackson Jr. And, you know, somehow they just can't keep their hands out of the cookie jar or other places, and their careers go off the rails. And the Mel Reynolds story is so, I mean, at first it was just outrageous, like this guy, and he does this incredibly stupid thing. But at this point, it's almost like pitiful.
Yeah.
You know, you think
it is pitiful.
Like you just think this guy's not quite right.
Well, how about people? And I can't just limit this to politicians, but I'm sure you know people in your own life who are just quote unquote victims of circumstance. Wherever they go, bad luck seems to follow them. And you always say to yourself, do you truly believe it's bad luck? Couldn't some of this be a blame on you?
What's
maybe
the common denominator
right
here?
It seems,
what's that character from the comics with the was walking around with a cloud over his head?
Well,
Handicap.
Was it
bad luck? Schleprock in the for the Flintstones.
Beetle Bailey, just to whip it out.
Oh, no. What?
Who is it? There is a guy. But the Flintstones had a guy named Bad Luck Schleprock that was always had that. Gulliver's Travels.
That's
got to
be who I'm thinking of. But anyway, yeah, you're right. There are people who. But these guys seem to manufacture their own bad luck. I mean, it's not bad luck when you have sex with a 16-year-old campaign worker.
Right. I think
right?
you
I mean,
have
that's
to.
That's a bad like, choice.
You have to take some blame on that one,
like
don't
some
you?
Some of the other Darn stuff, it seems kind of bizarre that he's in jail right now.
Well, that does, and you kind of wish him the best. You think, well, this guy, I mean, you hope that he could put his life together.
So if he had somebody come forth and provide him with a place to live, would they have not put him back in jail?
They did. A couple of people did come forward and offer him a place to stay, but you know, where are you going to find a place that's 500 feet from? I mean, daycare centers are everywhere, parks, schools. It's hard to find a place that fits the definition. And, you know, again, I just think that at some point that they need to rethink that law in terms of the kind of offense that was committed and when it was committed. This is like we're going on 22 years ago where he was doing this stuff. And, yeah, I don't know. It just seems like something where you'd want to cut the guy
off. He and his wife Marisol are no longer together, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. So a quick break. More with the feisty Eric Zorn. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Eric Zorn is here. Is he feisty? You bet he's feisty. It's Bill and Wendy. Eric, the cartoon character you were talking about that always has a cloud over his head, I did some extensive research, went through my data files. Joe is his first name, and his last name is BTFSPTLK. I don't know how you pronounce that.
Is that, that's in,
I don't know who's, it looks like
Lil
it's
Abner?
Lil Abner. Yeah. It looks like it's Al Capp's work.
Okay.
So Joe Biddleful Splicked.
Okay.
That's is the guy you were thinking
you
of. Thank you very much, Wendy. But my gut feels great.
It's much less gassy in here.
Much
I've
less than it was.
That.
Yeah,
yeah,
I don't know why.
He used to come in here just.
Yep.
It was a joke. It changed this woman's life.
Yep. Okay. Yep. All right, let's talk a little bit about the big race, the big presidential race. Bernie Sanders is not going anywhere. He refuses to drop out. Is that a good thing or a bad thing or what?
Well, it's a normal thing. And one of the things that I was interested in looking back in 2008, you know, there's this two-person Democratic race going on, and one candidate, everyone is written off and says, you know, can't win. Delegate math isn't there, but the candidate hangs on, fighting to the bitter end. And that candidate, of course, was Hillary Clinton. Barack Obama, who was then our senator, was hanging on to a lead in the delegates and was gathering up superdelegates. And Hillary Clinton was saying, like, well, I can still talk some superdelegates into voting for me. And if you remember this, do you guys remember the whole Michigan-Florida business?
A little bit.
Michigan and Florida, they moved their primaries up in the calendar because, you know, the earlier the primary, the more important it is.
Sure,
of course. I mean, everyone pays a lot of attention to Iowa, but no one, Kentucky's this week, and then Oregon and California after that. And it's like people are not really paying all that much attention. But the earlier primaries get more media buys, it gets more attention. So
yeah.
Michigan, Florida moved their primaries up. The Democratic National Committee said, no, you can't do that. So if you do, your primary is not going to count. Your delegates aren't going to, it's just not going to count. We're not going to figure this into the nomination battle. They went ahead and did it anyway. Hillary won big. Obama wasn't even on the ballot in Michigan, but Hillary had impressive, substantial victories in Michigan and Florida. And she was arguing through May that the Democratic National Committee and the superdelegates ought to pay attention to that, because if you counted those votes in Michigan and Florida, then she had the lead in the popular vote and arguably had a claim to being, and she kept saying, I'm the one who's much better positioned
right
to beat the Republican nominee, who was, of course, John McCain, and he had already secured the nomination. So anyway, so Hillary Clinton has seen this story before right now, and so we've got a sort of similar story happening now. Bernie Sanders is winning a lot of primaries. He's probably going to win Kentucky. A lot of people think he's going to win Oregon, too. Even though the polls show Hillary Clinton ahead, Oregon seems like it's kind of friendly territory to, you know, like, you know, Portland and those places.
Right,
seem
sure.
Like it might be a Sanders country. And then, you know, he's campaigning in California, and California voters, you know, never know what they're going to do.
Is this going to make a difference?
No, it shouldn't. It probably won't. Hillary Clinton's got a pretty big lead over him, and even if he wins these primaries, he's going to have to win them really resoundingly mm-hmm. to pick up enough pledged delegates. And then on top of the pledged delegates, of course, there are the super delegates who are unpledged but have mostly committed to Hillary Clinton. But you know, the whole thing is that she hung on until June 7th after the California primary, and that's when she gave a really nice speech. If you remember this, she gave a speech saying, you know, we've all got to get together and, you know, pull on the oars and get behind Senator Obama, and it's very important that we win the White House. Said all the things you expect him to say, her to say, expect a loser to say, and I think that's going to happen this time too. There's a lot of concern that, well, Bernie Sanders is out there and he's harming Hillary Clinton. He's making it harder for her. But I think that everyone needs to take, you know, who are on the Democratic side needs to take a deep breath and realize that this is going to be okay. That, you know, this is part of the process.
Sure, of course.
As long as he tries to bring his supporters and he comes around and says, look, it's important enough for us to get behind this. And he's indicated that he will.
Yeah.
So is that Steve Bertrand already?
Nope. It's a guy who looks like Steve
Bertrand.
Looks
like Steve Bertrand.
Look at all these mincing rascals talking to one another.
Handsome fellow, isn't he?
It's really too bad that the Mincing Rascals isn't a video podcast, because we are
or a video game.
We're all such a dashing group, but
except for John.
Don't.
Although, as cute as that little cartoon is, it doesn't look like you people.
It doesn't look like me at all.
No, one that you use as a logo. That one. Yeah. Eric, thank you. We appreciate it. Eric Zorn, read him in the Chicago Tribune. We'll check in with Steve in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.